Welcome back. Can you believe it? It's another episode of The Thing That I Do Sometimes from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today on the show, we are talking about the dire consequences of performative, self-serving politics. Oh, God, I am not looking forward to this, but we are going to do it anyway. But before we get into all of the unpleasantness, I have a new single out, probably, by the time this episode drops, by the time I finish editing it. The TikTok Digital Studio audience is here, and they're like, what? It's not out yet, you guys. It'll be out Friday, March 20th. So if this episode is dropping on YouTube after Friday, March 20th, or thereabouts, it might be out. I've decided to put this one back on most streaming platforms, even though I am very anti-Spotify and anti-streaming in general. This one will be on most platforms, just not Spotify still. Frig Spotify, even though it's the most popular one. That's kind of why I'm against it, and I might even do a whole video on why I'm against that one day. But my new single is called American Dream. Very happy about it. It's the first single off of my upcoming album, Allegoria, that I'm also really excited about, that should be coming out later this year. And yeah, check it out. You can find it on my Bandcamp that's linked in the description of this video, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, and on most streaming platforms that aren't Spotify, that aren't the one. Making this album and making music lately really has been saving my mental health. The process of making art lately has been a salve for me and has been doing wonders. And I've got all these fun ideas about, like, oh, why I actually do this. And I think that my whole life I thought it was about creating something to connect with the audience, and it only matters if it connects with the audience. And more the older I get, I'm like, no, I think it's about the artist. I think it's about, like, the experience the artist has while making the thing. The vast majority of art created in the world doesn't ever get to be seen by a larger audience, which means that the vast majority of art created in the world is mostly important because of the effect that it has on the person who made it, or the people who worked together to make it. And I think ultimately this album that I've been working on will be the people who will be the most affected are, like, me and my two producers, me and John and John. But I hope it manages to find some of you and that you enjoy it. New single out, American Dream, Friday, March 20th. Check that out. Patreon.com/AustinArcher, linked in the description of this video. Patreon community, shout out. My Patreon is $1 a month. I get comments on all the time lately on TikTok and on Instagram and on YouTube. People going, I haven't seen you in forever. The algorithm keeps hiding you from me. Well, it doesn't hide me from you on Patreon. You will see everything that I make, and bonus content and exclusive content for $1. $1 a month. Can you even believe it? I am almost entirely funded by viewers and my audience on Patreon these days. They make up like 85% of my yearly revenue right now as a content creator. That's why I made it $1, because I wanted to make it really, really easy for people to support me there. And I also want to make it so that, like, the only people I'm beholden to in my messaging is you, the people in my audience. Anyway, that's all that business stuff out of the way. The title of the show, The Dire Consequences of Performative Self-Serving Politics. Yeah, we're talking about performative protest voting, terminally online white leftists. Again, I'm so sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry. I promise this is going to be my last video about it for a while, because I am sure sick of it. I've made a few videos lately, couple videos on this topic, and the hit dogs came hollering, and my DMs and my comments have been an absolute nightmare. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to give these people too much credit, because they're getting, like, really high on their own supply, and a lot of them are like, don't you see, bro? You're getting torched in these comments. You're getting absolutely toasted. You're getting friggin' lit up in these comments. Don't you see what a clown you are? And I really want these people to understand that, like, they are still heavily outnumbered. The videos that I've been posting are doing really well. The like to view ratio is where it should be. It's healthy. It's in, like, the 25 to 30% range. Like, 25 to 30% of people who are watching it are liking it. The comments are, like, 90% positive, and people going, like, thank you for saying this. We agree with you. So, like, don't get too full of yourselves out there, protest voter leftists who are like loading up my DMs and loading up my messages and being like, we're winning. Everyone agrees with us. You are still heavily in the minority. Most people on the left still disagree with you and think you guys are idiots. You're very loud. You're a very loud, obnoxious minority, and you are very hard to deal with, because I know that I have to deal with you. Like, unlike MAGA Republicans, where I can just sort of go, whatever, who cares, you guys are a lost cause, you're in a weird cult, and your humanity is completely gone. There's, like, traces of humanity left in you, and you are the people with whom I am supposed to build coalitions, so I have to deal with you. And that means that when you come for me, it is more psychologically exhausting and difficult than when the typical MAGA cult comes for me. I don't really care when the MAGA cult comes for me. Because here's the thing. I am a terminally online white leftist, regardless of what the other protest voter leftists think. They all call me a neo-fascist capitalist shitlib, because that's who everyone who disagrees with them is in their minds. I am a terminally online white leftist. My audience is full of terminally online white leftists, and a lot of us voted for Harris, and, you know, not because we're shitlib Dems, but because we were voting strategically for harm reduction and just, you know, playing the numbers. We understand how math works, and we were just doing the only thing we could do to try to prevent a Trump presidency. But it, you know, like, that, like, even those people in my audience, the people who voted for her, are like, dude, why are we still doing this? The comment that I've been getting from a lot of people is like, hey, I voted for her. I did it. Why are you still talking about this? Why are we still relitigating this? From both the people who were protest voters, the abstention voters, Jill Stein voters, and even TOWLs, T-O-W-Ls, terminally online white leftists in my audience who voted for her, I'm getting this comment of like, why are you doing it again? Why are we still doing this? It's March of 2026. Why are you still campaigning for a person who lost in November of 2024? What are you doing? I want to make it clear, I am not doing this to relitigate the case of Kamala Harris's presidential campaign, and I'm not here like advocating for Kamala 2024, because I understand that it is March 2026. I'm not trying to retroactively convince you to go back in time and change your vote. This is not about convincing you to like Kamala Harris more, or to convincing you to like the Democratic Party more. That's not what this is about at all. If you've got criticisms of how that campaign was run, I'm sure they are valid. Some of them, I think people are actually just ignorant. Like, people will just be like, all she had to do was call for a ceasefire. And it's like, well, she did a lot. If you're not aware of that, that is on you. She used those exact words on like many, many, many occasions. And they're like, well, would it have killed her to at least have said anything that sounded like she liked Palestinians? And it's like, she did. She talked directly about fighting for the self-determination and liberation and safety of Palestinian people. Like, she used those exact words, like self-determination and safety of the Palestinian people, on the debate stage against Donald Trump. Like, she used those exact words on multiple occasions. If you're not aware of that, that is like you, that's your fault. That's your bad. But again, I'm not doing this to be like, here's why Harris is so great. Here's why the Harris campaign was perfect and made no mistakes. Personally, my opinion is and always has been, it was during the campaign process anyway in 2024, I don't really care what your Monday morning quarterback armchair opinion of the campaign is. I find it entirely irrelevant. Like, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter like what mistakes you think the DNC made, what you think they could have or should have done better. What I do know about like presidential campaigns is that I've never managed one. I've never run one. And I don't think anyone in my audience has either. I've never talked to anyone directly who has managed a presidential campaign that garnered 75 million votes. I've never like sat down and interviewed them and like been like, explain to me why you guys made every single choice you made. Explain to me the rationale behind it. I can only speculate on why they do the things that they do. And I can sort of look with a rather unqualified eye and be like, I don't think I would have done that. Or, oh, I wouldn't have, you know, I don't think I would have said most lethal military in the world. I don't think I would have used those words. I don't think I would have gone on a tour with Liz Cheney and been like, this is the way to invigorate my base. Like, there's definitely things that I think I would have done differently. But again, I've never run for president. I've never tried to get 81 million votes from a voting bloc and coalition as wildly ideologically diverse as the left voting bloc is in America. I've never been in that position, so I don't really know. And nobody in my audience has ever been in that position either. So I'm just sort of like, yeah, our opinion, my opinion and yours is irrelevant, because at the end of the day, the choices were what they were. Like, it doesn't matter, like, if we think they should have zigged when they zagged, they should have said this instead of saying that. In November of 2024, it was Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. The campaigns were run. They were run the way they were run. The words that were said were said. The answers given to questions in interviews were the answers that they were. My opinion on, like, would I have answered that question that way? Is that the best way you could have answered that question? My opinion on that is irrelevant at that point. At that point, I have to make a choice as a voter. I have a responsibility to vote for harm reduction. I have a responsibility to deny far-right extremist authoritarian theocratic fascist billionaire pedophiles from the seat of executive power. I have a responsibility to do that. I took that responsibility seriously and I did my job. This is not about me trying to get you to go back in time and reconsider your choice. It's not about me saying they actually ran the best campaign ever in the history of the world. I don't care about that. I don't care about your valid concerns about the DNC and their moneyed interests and their ethically and morally compromised positions, because they have corporate money that is compromising those positions. And what I care about is that, like, if you didn't vote for her in some kind of misguided protest, some kind of self-serving performative protest, I care about accountability for that. What I care about, the reason why I'm still talking about this, is because it is March of 2026. It has been 15 months of the second Trump administration, and the world is where it is. And we still have yet to get clear accountability from the people who are directly responsible for the world being the way that it is right now. And these people largely are still just digging their heels in and just going, I didn't do anything wrong. This isn't on me. Nope. We cannot move forward as a team, as a coalition, until we get accountability, like until we are clear about, like, what happened, what went wrong, why it was wrong, what's going on right now, and why we are in the situation we are in right now, and how can we avoid that going forward in the future. I understand that the main emotional driver to the protest vote rationale was, and still is, I refuse to capitulate to the Democratic Party and compromise my personal values if they will not commit to ending the genocide in Gaza. I am not confused about that. No other towel in my audience who voted for Harris is or ever was confused about that position. I agree with the emotional core of that position. I agree that it is an emotionally resonant position, that on the surface, it is a noble and entirely humane and completely understandable hard line to say, I cannot compromise my personal values or capitulate if you guys cannot commit to helping the people in Gaza and helping the Palestinian people and fighting for Palestinian liberation and ending the genocide. That has to be a red line for me. I see this over and over and over again from the leftists online who refuse to vote for Harris, that they're just like, sorry, genocide wasn't a red line for you. Sorry, it wasn't a hard line for you. I understand the emotional core of your position. I really, really do. And I share it because I also hate the genocide in Gaza. And I have used my platform repeatedly to denounce the genocide in Gaza, to denounce Israel's imperialistic, racist, ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. I have been completely unequivocal on this, that I am 100% against the United States' unholy alliance with Israel in this genocidal ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. I have said this in countless videos. I have an entire list of videos that I've made where I've talked about this. In the description of the video that is on screen right now, you can go to that video. It's linked in the description of this video, and you can look at the list of all of the videos I've ever made if you don't believe me. But I've been very, very clear on this. I understand your position, and I agree with it in the sense of the principle that you are fighting for. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with your rationale, with the rationale being, I could not compromise my personal values. I could not capitulate to the Democratic Party if they were not willing to meet my demands as it pertains to the genocide in Gaza. Here's the problem. Please hear me out. You were unwilling to compromise your personal values with a vote for Harris. As a direct result of being unwilling to help her win to prevent Trump from getting to the White House, as a direct result, this is a short list of things that have happened in the last 15 months that unequivocally would not have happened if Kamala Harris had been elected president. These things simply would not have happened. A big part of the reason why these things wouldn't have happened is because most of what happens during a Trump presidency is just entirely unprecedented. He's just an unprecedented level of like weird and crazy and evil. Republicans and Democrats alike, it's just like the history of U.S. presidents, there just hasn't been someone who breaks the rules and the norms and the laws this regularly and this brazenly. So here's a short list. The first one is Trump was reelected as a direct result of your self-serving performative action of I will not capitulate on my personal values. As a direct result of you not being able to compromise, Trump was reelected. As a direct result of you not being able to compromise, he took immediate hostile aim at the trans community. In the first few days of his administration, he came out with executive orders saying, there are only two genders. I'm going to write it on this piece of paper that there are only two genders, and we're going to make sure we get men out of women's sports and we get rid of transgender for everyone. He loves that one. They want transgender for everyone. That catchphrase. That wouldn't have happened. There's just, you're not being a serious person if you think that Kamala Harris in her first few days in office would have been like, let me write this executive order that states unequivocally that there are only two genders. As a direct downstream effect of that legislation, by the way, trans people in Kansas can't have a driver's license right now. Like, that's the result of, like, it actually has like real tangible downstream effects that make trans people exponentially less safe. Elon Musk and Doge. And when we say Doge, let's be clear what we're talking about. We're talking about like an army of unhinged 19-year-old incels who are like largely illiterate and have no idea what they're doing, were able to take a wrecking crew and do immeasurable damage to the federal government, just absolutely destroying long-standing institutions that are necessary, that like that do immeasurable good across, not just in the United States, but across the globe. We are going to come back to the effects of them disbanding USAID and how disastrous that has been. As a direct result, the executive branch was completely staffed with insane, unqualified bigots and podcasters. You're not being a serious or honest person if you think that Kamala Harris would have made the director of the FBI a podcaster who was nice to her with no experience in law enforcement. You're not being serious if you think she would have hired an alcoholic ex-Fox News host to be the Secretary of Defense and then renamed him the Secretary of War and then let him have like war councils with generals where he tells everybody that they're too fat to be in the military. You're not being serious if you actually think that that's what have happened. The entire executive branch has been staffed by sycophantic loyalists, you know, Brendan Carr as the head of the FCC. The chairman of the FCC is not supposed to be a loyalist to the party that governs over the executive branch. The chairman of the FCC is not supposed to be directly answerable to the president. They are not supposed to take marching orders from the president. But under Donald Trump, they do, which means that the executive branch now has the ability to basically eliminate whatever remnants of a free press we had left in this country. They can take long-standing talk shows off the air and just go, we're getting rid of that now. We're not even going to replace Stephen Colbert with a new host. We're just going to get rid of The Late Show altogether. We're going to take Jimmy Kimmel off the air, you know, as a warning shot that, like, we can do this now because we run this institution. You're not being serious or honest if you don't acknowledge that those things simply would not have happened, that we would have actually had competent people with experience in those jobs. SCOTUS appointees. This probably should have gone down in, I have two different categories here. I have just like cosmetic direct result stuff, and then I have like the actual bad stuff. And SCOTUS appointees, Supreme Court appointees, could go in the actual bad stuff, but like allowing Donald Trump to have more Supreme Court appointees than he already got in his first term just does like like irreparable damage to the cause of social progressivism for decades. It does generational damage. It's like the stakes of that like kind of can't be overstated. Destroying the White House, using hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to destroy the East Wing of the White House and build a ballroom. I know that like this is like the performative terminally online leftists who are the protest voters. They hate it when I bring this up. They're like, oh, that's such shit lib behavior to be like, oh, he tore down the White House. It fucking matters, dude. Stop pretending that it doesn't, that it's insane and unprecedented that the president just tore down half of the fucking White House so he could build himself a ballroom. The symbol of it is just something that never in a million years would have happened with anybody else in office, Republican or Democrat. Like, any other person would not have done that. Slapping his name on everything, just throwing his name on every goddamn building, every goddamn monument, changing the Gulf of America or Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. I know, again, I am aware that these are the cosmetic things that you're like, I don't fucking care about that. I don't care that he's putting his name on. I get it. We're gonna get to the bad stuff. It's a short list. The list could go on for literally hours. Tariffs. This is a pretty bad one. Pretty bad one. Just like all of the damage that was done with our trade partners through his absolutely idiotic, moronic economic policies. And just the back and forth of that and the up and down and just the way that his supporters said that they were voting him in because they really cared about the cost of gas and eggs. And then how he made all of that stuff worse, that he just made like everyone's lives worse. The actual result, now that the Supreme Court has said, actually, you can't do those tariffs, the result of it is all of the businesses that raised their prices to offset the cost of the tariffs are just keeping their prices where they were. It almost seems like he did that so that he could like help those business owners artificially inflate their prices and be like, sorry, gotta tariffs. And then once the Supreme Court was like, actually no tariffs, they were like, how about still high prices though, and I collect extra profits. It seems like he did that to get on the side of people who like making money in scummy ways, which is like kind of who the base of the Republican Party is. Like, they're always appealing to people. It's like, hey, you like making lots of money by screwing people over, right? What if we helped you make even more money by screwing over even more people? And like, people who are down with that like to vote for Republicans. Anyway, the tariffs were bad. All of the attempts to start World War III, if you'll remember, it wasn't just this most recent one. It's not just like, oh shit, like, whoa, we bombed Iran just recently with Israel. He was bombing Iran like almost immediately. And it's not just Iran. It's like everyone. In my lifetime, I've watched America do a lot of shady imperialistic shit. I've watched the American government go into a lot of places it doesn't have any business being in and throw their weight around, you know, be Team America World Police and do a lot of imperialistic American Empire, we're the, you know, biggest dick in town stuff. I've never seen a United States president act directly like Adolf Hitler in the 1930s and be like, my goal is to take over as many new territories as possible. I want to expand the global territory and reach and might of the American Empire and just openly talk about being like, I'm going to get Greenland. I'm going to get Mexico. I'm going to get Cuba. I'm going to get Venezuela. I'm going to get Iran. I'm going to like literally just being like, hey, we're coming for everybody. And the existential threat that poses to all of us, like the danger, the clear and present danger that puts the entire country in when other global superpowers who aren't necessarily down, not talking about Israel here, talking about China, talking about Russia, when they watch America doing shit like that and being like, hey, we're taking everybody over. We're taking on everybody. And y'all get ready. You don't think that they're getting together in meetings without America and going, hey, at what point do we step in? At what point does intervention need to take place? Because yes, we've all watched America do shady shit like this before. We've all watched the CIA be involved in coups and regime changes and things like that before, but I don't think we've watched them just out loud be like, hey, should we take over the world? That's how world wars start. Like, that's why a world war is a world war. And he's been just like casually like trying openly to start a world war since he got in office, pardoning the January 6th insurrectionists, people who directly tried to overthrow our democratic system, traitors to our country. I'm going to pardon them because of course I am. I'm the one who sent them to do that. If you'll remember, not Kamala Harris, not the Democrats. It wasn't the Democratic Party that sent those people to overthrow our frail grasp on whatever power the voting class has. It was, you know, the greatest villain in the world right now, Donald J. Trump. Sycophant propagandists in the White House press room. This kind of goes along with the loyalists at every level of his staff and, you know, people like Brendan Carr being in charge of the FCC and the dissolution of whatever was left of journalistic integrity in America, that now you've got people like Tim Pool in the White House press room asking all these like right wing, you know, Newsmax sycophants asking these softball questions like, how is the president so sexy? How is he so sexy and hot and smart? And Caroline Leavitt being like, that's fantastic. That's a fantastic question. You're a real patriot for that. For that matter, Caroline Leavitt, we would not just Caroline Leavitt. Just, we wouldn't have had to have ever known who Caroline Leavitt is or ever heard her speak or look at her if Kamala Harris had won. That's enough reason, right? Just Caroline Leavitt. The proliferation of all of the racist fear-mongering about Somalis and Muslims and Latinos, it was stuff that's all in his bag of tricks that he's been doing his entire career. But at least if we make him irrelevant and we don't let him win another election and we just sort of like push him into the fringes of society, we just don't have to hear about it as much. But then when we re-elect him, it's like, oh, it's all back. It's all the scapegoating and the victimizing and villainizing of people of color and Arab people and Muslim people and, you know, people from shithole countries and garbage countries, all of that shit. In the vein of like the sycophant propagandists in the White House press room and Caroline Leavitt, quiet piggy. I know, I get it. I get that you're like, the genocide's a bigger deal. We're gonna get there. But it's just, again, unprecedented stuff. Republican or Democrat, whoever the president is, just having a president who just people ask him questions and he just goes like, shut the fuck up, fat ass. I'm not answering that. Is insane. It's so crazy that that happens and nobody checks him on it because the like all of the branches of government are so inundated with people who are loyalists to this insane cult that we all just have to watch like insane, unprecedented behavior take place on a day-to-day basis and just kind of go like, I guess that's just what life is like in a Trump world. The proliferation of all of the fear-mongering about queer people and all of the stuff about just, oh, they're coming after your kids. They're indoctrinating your kids from a guy who is literally maybe the world's foremost child predator and now is also maybe the most powerful man in the world talking to us about how queer people are the enemy when it comes to your kids, using the office to grow his personal wealth by $4 billion in his first year. Again, you are not being serious or honest if you say something like, oh, they all do that. Two sides of the same coin, Uniparty. They're all lining their pockets. They're all getting those kickbacks. I know, buddy. I know that they're all getting lobbyist money. I know that we can look at all of these people in Congress and go, I know what your salary is. Your salary is like $250,000 and you're worth $14 million. How did that happen? How did that, like, We know there are backroom handshakes going on. We know there's insider trading going on. This is nothing new. We have never had a billionaire president who made himself a billionaire off of the office of the presidency. We've never had a billionaire president, period. This is unprecedented. There is no former president of the United States who is a billionaire, who used the office of the presidency to make themselves a billionaire while they were in there or after. That has not happened, and he has grown his personal net worth by $4 billion in the first year of his second administration. So saying, like, this stuff would have happened no matter what, no, it would not have. It does not happen. It is unprecedented. That's what unprecedented means. I don't think you understand the difference between a few million dollars on a book deal or a speaking tour and $4 billion off of scamming people with crypto. I can't emphasize the difference between those things in scumbaggery. Are they both scummy? Sure, I will grant you that. Are they the exact same indistinguishable? No. Please get serious. Please get a sense of proportionality and perspective. And just having to see and hear him is my last one in the kind of you know, just cosmetic one. It's sort of similar to the Caroline Leavitt one, where it's like, I would have taken a Harris presidency if for no other reason, just to not have to see him and hear him as often. One of the nicest things about the 4 years of the Biden administration was just like seeing and listening to his voice less often. But again, I get it. I get that the response to everything I just said, and by the way, everything I just said is such a short list. 15 months, folks. 15 months, and that's my short list. But I get that your response is, so what, Lib? So what, shit, Lib? Kamala still would have continued with the genocide. Oh no, the White House has been taken down. Genocide, Lib. Those things are not equal. I get it. I get it. Chill. Hold your horses. We're getting to the bad stuff. That wasn't even the bad stuff. That was just like the annoying, crazy, unprecedented stuff that would not have happened. So let's start with your favorite thing. Let's start with your pet issue. Not only did your performative, self-serving gesture not save a single soul in Gaza, not only are the only group of people you even pretend to care about every bit as down bad as they've always been, but on top of that, now the entire Middle East is at war. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of extra people in more regions are now dying. Children, places being bombed that were not being bombed before. The problem has grown exponentially worse. Not only, like the one thing you cared about, the one issue you just couldn't be moved on, nothing you did helped anyone in that region in any substantive way. You did not produce one substantive result to contribute to the safety and well-being and self-determination of the Palestinian people with your protest vote. And I am so sorry to be the one to break that news to you, but I'm trying to hold your hand through it, but I need you to understand that and own that. And I think you do understand it. And I think that's why you get so mad in my comments, because you do know that. You do know that the one issue you weren't willing to budge on, you weren't able to affect regardless. It's just as bad and worse. It's exponentially worse. Also, this thing of like, she would have done it too. We'll never know is the problem. You know, I'm not necessarily going to be like, no, she wouldn't have. Again, I'm not here to relitigate why Kamala Harris is the best candidate in the world and why she would have made the best president in the world. I'm not here to like tell you why Kamala Harris is a superhero or great, or why you shouldn't be allowed to criticize Kamala Harris. I had some people in my comments say that. They were like, okay, I get it. I voted for her, but like, why are we not allowed to criticize her? And I was like, who the fuck told you that? Who told you you're not allowed to criticize her? I didn't say that. Criticize away. What I said was, at the end of the day, if it's her or him, do your fucking job, be an adult, and vote strategically for harm reduction. But go ahead and criticize away. If she had won, I would hope that we would all be outside the White House together, continuing to protest for the safety and liberation and self-determination of the Palestinian people, pushing and pressuring the Harris administration to do better by the Palestinian people, to fight for their safety and self-determination. I hope we all would have been out there in the streets continuing to pressure a Harris administration to fight for those people. That is my hope. We'll never know now. We'll never know what would have happened. What we do know is that, again, on the campaign trail, she is the only one of the viable candidates of the two, between her and Trump, who ever said anything that even remotely sounded like she might be open to being pressured on something like that. I'm not going to debate what could have happened in the hypothetical world that did not come to pass. All I'm telling you is what did happen as a direct result of your actions. You were not able to substantively produce any results for the people in Palestine that led directly to them being any more safe. In fact, the actual result is that Arab people throughout the Middle East are all significantly less safe because of what you did. And then you say, well, Harris would have gone along with the Iran plan too. She would have capitulated to Israel on Iran. Again, not going to debate you on what would have happened in a hypothetical reality where Harris won, because that's not the reality where we live. What I will tell you is Israel has been trying to get a United States president to join them in bombing Iran and attacking Iran for decades. They tried to get Obama to do it. They tried to get Biden to do it. No one has said yes until Donald Trump. Remember that unprecedented thing? That thing how I said like 90% of what happens in a Donald Trump presidency is unprecedented. It's stuff that no other president has done. That includes this. The thing about, like, our alliance with Israel is that's not unprecedented. Like when protest voters go like, you know that the Democrats are just as pro-Israel as the Republicans, it's like, yeah, no fucking duh. America has been aligned with Israel and allied with Israel since before I was born, my entire life. We never haven't been. You're acting like this just happened. You're acting like after October 7th, the Democrat Party was all of a sudden like, you know what? We should support Israel. That's not a new position. Like, no fucking duh. We are allied with them. What is new is an American president saying, you know what, BB? You got it, dog. Let's ride. Let's go. Let's fucking do it. Let's go get Iran. He's been trying to get us to do that with him for a very long time. Nobody's taken him up on the offer until now. So again, couldn't tell you what would have happened if she had been president. All I can tell you is that, like, nobody else did it until now. And that is what's going on because you voted the way that you voted. Let's keep going down the list of the bad things that have happened. They cut USAID, an institution that Donald Trump just told his base was evil for no reason. He never produced any evidence on this. He just told everyone, like, oh, it's run by a lot of really radical people, really crazy radical people, and didn't tell him why, didn't say what they were doing. But the MAGA cult doesn't need him to, like, explain why things are bad. If he says something bad is bad, it's bad. That's how a cult works, you know? But they cut USAID, and as a direct result of them cutting USAID, a thing that Kamala Harris would not have done. That's something I can tell you, like the other things, I'm like, I don't know. As a direct result of that, hundreds of thousands of people, including children across the world, have died in the last year, in the first year of the Trump presidency. So your big thing with Gaza, again, a position I am with you on. Do not forget about that. I care just as much, every bit as much so, about the suffering in Gaza as you do. In fact, I would argue I care more about it because of the way I voted. I actually voted to, in a way that had a chance of helping those people. You did not, but whatever. But that thing that we both care about, your big thing was like, they've killed like 100,000 people in 2 years. That's terrible. Agree. Awful. Genocide is taking place. Ethnic cleansing is taking place. It seems like these performative, self-serving protest voter leftists can only recognize mass murder and mass harm when it's done with shrapnel and artillery, like when it's done with missiles. And this is a thing that, like, across the board people have a hard time with. They have a hard time of recognizing political violence when it's in the form of, like, denying people access to healthcare, denying people access to life-saving medication and life-saving vaccines. Like, I think we get it in the abstract that it's like, yeah, I guess technically, like, people could die as the result of that, but that is direct political violence. And I feel like what resonates with people more on an emotional level is like, oh, I just watched a community get exploded. Like, the buildings blew up and little kids were stuck in the rubble and I had to see, like, legs sticking. Like, I get why. Like, it's horrific and disturbing and traumatic. It's harder for us to understand when, like, someone just goes, I'm going to cut funding to this program that provides life-saving medication to millions of people around the world. And as a direct result of that, like, a genocide of people around the globe are going to unnecessarily die. They're going to die in hospital beds slowly and painfully from preventable illness. And it's not going to look as insane and grisly and crazy and traumatic as a war does, but the tally, the death toll that you have inflicted because of your performative self-serving action is catastrophic. I need you to understand this, that, like, on top of not saving a single soul in Gaza, you are adding hundreds of thousands of deaths in a medical genocide, in a global medical catastrophe. And it cannot be overstated how absolutely drastic this is. And it happened literally because of Elon Musk and a gang of illiterate 19-year-old incels who didn't know what they were doing. I can say confidently that that would not have happened had Donald Trump not been elected, because Kamala Harris had no plans on letting the richest man in the world and a team of illiterate 19-year-old incels come in and just start cutting random government programs without knowing anything about those programs. That was not going to happen. So hundreds of I cannot emphasize this enough, how drastic this is. Hundreds of thousands of extra deaths on top of the suffering in Gaza, the only issue you pretend to care about. If you can't wrap your brain around how much worse you have made things. It is truly staggering. Also, as the result of the Doge cuts, we made massive cuts to cancer research, which is going to lead to thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of unnecessary deaths. The big beautiful bill made it so that millions of people can no longer afford healthcare, which will result in much more mass death. The ICE budget ballooned from $6 billion to $85 billion with the Big Beautiful Bill, and the hyper-militarization of ICE, along with the staffing of it, with white supremacist, psychotic people from traitorous, violent gangs like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and the pardoned January 6th insurrectionists, who are also Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. Staffing it with those people means more death, more suffering, exponentially more. So this was our rationale. As terminally online white leftists, which is what I am, which is what a lot of the people in my audience are, progressive leftists who voted for Harris. We did not do so because we're shit libs. We didn't do so because we're neo-lib fascist capitalist Dems. That's not why we did it. We have all the same criticisms of the Democratic Party that you do. We have all the same criticisms of their unholy alliances with certain moneyed interests that you do. We don't like the alliance with Israel just as much as you don't like the alliance with Israel. We did it because we knew about all of these other effects, and we cared about trans people and disabled people and people of color and immigrants and women. We were thinking about other people other than just our sanctimonious ego. The problem with your rationale is you were like, I can't do it. I can't stomach the idea of voting for people who won't meet me on my one issue. It's important to me that they meet me on my issue. And you needed to set your sanctimonious ego aside and say, what can I do for other people? Think about other people. Think about the costs to other people. And think about the lives you could save. So the rationale you were using, we are not truly free until we are all free. We cannot be free until we are all free. Or injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. So that's sort of the logic behind being like, sorry, like if the people in Gaza are not free, if they are not safe, then no one is. If they are not free, no one is. If there is injustice there is injustice everywhere. And if we cannot show up for them, then I don't trust the system to show up for anyone else. That was the rationale. Again, and we're going to come back to this. Performative leftists love a good slogan. They absolutely love it. Put a pin in that. We're going to come back to that. But here's the problem. You did this under the banner of these slogans. We are not free unless everyone is free. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. But what you actually did in practice is you said, if a group of people I care about is suffering somewhere, then I want everyone everywhere to suffer until their suffering stops. Those two concepts are measurably, crucially different. They are not the same thing. You can fully acknowledge that we are not all free, or no one is free until we are all free, while still voting for harm reduction. You can hold those two positions at the same time. You can still believe that injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere, while still voting for harm reduction, while still trying to save as many lives as you can. But the concept, I don't like that nothing's being done for this group of people in this region of the world, therefore I am going to make a vote that is going to make them less safe and everyone else less safe. The way I'm going to express my disgust about that is I'm going to hurt exponentially more people. You ideologically undercut your own position. You're taking an action that is directly antithetical to the principles and values you claim to have. Causing more harm does not make you the more principled person. It makes you the less principled person. Protest voters will constantly go like, don't blame us for being consistent. Sorry, we're consistent. You aren't. You actually aren't. There's nothing consistent about saying, I am disgusted by mass murder and ethnic cleansing. I am so disgusted by it that I am willing to cause exponentially more mass murder across the world with the cutting of USAID, with the cutting of cancer research. That's how disgusted I am. Until we fix the mass death here, I don't care about mass death literally anywhere else in any other form. That is not intellectually consistent. That is wildly, crucially, dangerously inconsistent. And that is why I'm still talking about this. That's why this matters because you're still in my comments and in my DMs not getting it. You're still not understanding how more death is worse than less death. You're still not understanding how more evil is worse than less evil. You're still not getting how enabling worse evil makes you worse. Oh, you just capitulate to the lesser of two evils. Yes, I fucking do. All day, every day. If you give me the choice between the most evil and significantly less evil but still bad, I will take significantly less evil but still bad any day of the week. And that is ideologically consistent with who I am and what my values are. You have enough emotional awareness and emotional intelligence to understand why genocide is bad, and that's a good thing. You have enough emotional awareness to understand why bombing kids is bad, why ethnic cleansing is bad, why Zionism is an inherently racist ideology, and why imperialism is bad, why apartheid is bad. You understand why, like, subjugating an entire population of people just because of their ethnicity is bad, which means you have more emotional intelligence and awareness than every MAGA Republican. It means we have way more in common than anyone on the right. It means there's something fundamental to the way we see the world in an emotional way that unites us, that makes us the same. And that's why I'm talking to you. Where the disconnect is, where the infuriatingly is, while you have a healthy moral compass, you seem to lack logical political literacy, an understanding of, like, effective, pragmatic political strategy. And it's, like, on the level of MAGA Republicans, like, as different as you are in MAGA Republicans here, where, like, you've really got a functioning heart. Here, you're dangerously similar to them in your grasp of, like, nuance and political strategy and, like, what would be, like, a smart way to effectively advocate for our mutual goals. And I'm trying to see if I can make the connection from here to here. I'm trying to see if I can connect your head and your heart and get us on the same page, because I think we have enough in common that we can repair this relationship. We can work together. And not only can we kind of have to. I'm going to play a video now, and I want to give a disclaimer about the video I'm going to play. This was a protest voter leftist who responded to some of the videos I made recently on TikTok. There is a reason why I am very specific in my terminology when I say terminally online white leftist. There's a reason why I say the word white. And that's because, as a white progressive, I believe that I have no business telling people who are more marginalized than me how to feel about the oppression that they experience that I do not. I don't tell people who are more marginalized, more oppressed than me, how they should feel or how they should respond to their oppression. The people who I take direct aim at and am the most critical of are the people who share my same tier of privilege, the people who are the most likely to be protected from the worst effects of a Trump presidency, the worst effects of fascism, who should be using their privilege more responsibly. I'm very specific with that language, but I got a video from a protest voter leftist who is a black man. And I want to make it clear that this is not me coming for the black community, because there are very few groups, marginalized groups in the United States of America, who would be more justified in saying fuck all this and never participating in their civic duty or voting ever again than black Americans. I think that, like, they would be completely justified in saying, fuck this, fuck the system, fuck everybody. We're not voting for Democrats. We're not voting for Republicans. Fuck this whole thing. And I think most people would have to go, like, fair, fair, you know, it, like, that community and, like, indigenous people and trans people. And then you take an intersection of that, like, black trans women, like, hey, there are some of these groups that it's like you would be totally justified in saying, I don't want to fucking help anybody. I don't want to participate in any of this. Despite the fact that this is a community that would be totally justified in shirking off their civic duty, black Americans are so fucking cool, and they're such, like, dope revolutionaries because they still show up and vote in huge numbers, in droves, and they overwhelmingly vote for harm reduction. Like, the thing about this video that this protest voter, black leftist, made responding to me is, he tries to tell me that, like, I'm not in tune with what it's like to be black or with the black experience. And what I want to say is that 83% of black voters voted for Kamala Harris and agree with me and understand the need for strategic harm reduction. It feels a little bit like a black conservative telling me like, hey, don't tell me about my experience and how black people should feel. The reason why black people agree with me and vote for Donald Trump is because of this, this, and this. And it's like, well, I wouldn't deign to tell you what your experience is as a black man. I would not do that. But you're statistically wrong. The majority of the black community does not agree with you and did not vote for Donald Trump. You are a statistical outlier in your demographic. And it's the same with this man that I'm responding to. He's talking as though he's the representative for the monolithic black community and black experience and telling me I should not be speaking for black people. But I am not doing that. I am specifically taking pains to speak directly to white leftists. That's the caveat I've got to make about this video before we watch it. But we are going to get into it and I'm going to respond to the points he makes because he sort of covers a lot of what the typical protest vote rationale and response to someone like me is. Okay.
Paula would have been just as bad as Trump and you guys wouldn't care.
I can't take liberals like this serious because here's the thing. Y'all only care about being a good person if you're perceived that way. But if principally you have to behave that way, y'all will fold.
All right. So first things first, the projection is off the charts with this video. It is, and we're going to, this is going to come back up later on in the episode too, but this whole thing of you only care about principles so that you can be perceived as a good person couldn't be me, couldn't be more what protest voters are. That you are not actually willing to take actual action to substantively help the communities you claim to care about. You are only willing to take action so that you can say, hey, I didn't vote for genocide. You only want the appearance of caring about mass suffering. You only want the appearance of being more principled. You are not willing to actually do the thing that has the chance of making sure that hundreds of thousands of people don't die from a government, a necessary institution like USAID being cut. You're not willing to make the vote for strategic harm reduction. You just want to appear like you have principles. You want to be able to say, I was the one who did the good thing and actually cared about the Palestinians, even though nothing you did substantively advocated for that people. Also, of course he calls me a liberal because everyone that disagrees with an online protest voter leftist is a shitlib, is a liberal. And that's going to come back up later, but let's keep listening.
Harris was a part of a genocidal administration. She could have easily, she could have lied better, but she didn't. She chose Israel over you.
Okay, so, yeah, the United States is allied with Israel, yes. And again, this kind of goes to my point where I say it really feels like when protest voters like this talk about this, like they think the Biden-Harris administration was the first presidential administration in the history of the United States to make the choice to ally with Israel. October 7th happened and the Biden-Harris administration got in the war room and they were like, whose side should we take? Whose side should we be on here? And they were like, let's be on the side of Israel. And it wasn't that the decision was already made. We already were allies with them and they were just basically doing, like keeping with precedent, just doing the thing that they've always done. The line always has been, Israel are our friends. We are, Israel has the right to defend itself. We are here to help Israel do that. I don't agree with that, but like this thing that you're saying, like, you know, she was part of a genocidal administration. I'm like, well, she was a part of an administration that was allied with Israel and like that, because that's what every administration was. That's, you're not telling me anything I don't already know, and you're not like revealing new information to me. It's like, oh shit, you're not breaking new ground here.
Could have easily, she could have lied better, but she didn't. She chose Israel over you, over Americans, right?
Okay, so this thing too also of like, she could have lied better. Again, what this makes me think is like, you didn't actually watch her on the campaign trail. You were reading forums, I guess, maybe online of people who felt the same way you did, people who were advocating for voting for Jill Stein or Cornel West or Claudia De La Cruz, who were saying like, she's like, you were looking at that one interview where she was asked like, are you going to change anything about the approach to Palestine? And she said, no. The way that question was asked, it was a negative question. The interviewer said, so no change from the current administration on Palestine? And she said, no, I think it was, she said no as like, if someone said, so we're not hanging out tonight? And you said, no, I could hang out. I just need to finish a few things before. You're not saying, no, we're not going to hang out. You're answering no to a negative question. But anyway, that's like the one quote that everyone can point to that says like, she should have lied better. She should have said she advocated for a ceasefire. She did say that. So if you wanted her to lie better and at least make it sound like she cared about a ceasefire or she cared about, you know, a weapons embargo or she cared about, you know, fighting for the Palestinian people, she did. She said all of those things. And also the Biden administration introduced they pushed for a weapons embargo during the campaign. Like the Biden administration did that. I just think you weren't paying attention.
And the thing is, the reason why these leftists were verbalizing opposition to Harris is because she was a part of a genocide administration. And here's the thing. Not only was she praising the endorsement of Dick Cheney while campaigning, Tim Walz said that they believe in the expansion of Israel. That's greater Israel. That's further war crimes. And y'all can't fathom why leftists, Muslims, Palestinians would not be in support of a candidate who's a part of that administration. Like, y'all mindset is really the blue maggot.
I can 100% fathom and empathize with why Palestinians and Muslims and Arabs did not want to ally with that administration. I have said multiple times in multiple different pieces of content, including this one, that's why I take aim at white leftists who are not part of that community, who are not going to experience the worst effects of whatever result they were fearing. I absolutely empathize with that, and I absolutely understand that. Again, I'm not confused about like the idea of we were afraid of more war crimes happening. It's just when you say, like, the reason why we didn't want to vote for her is because, do you understand, more stuff was going to happen. That's what they were talking about. Yeah, we get that. Harm reduction voters understand that more stuff was going to happen under Harris or Trump. And the question was, who's going to have less, more stuff? Like, who, like, you're saying more war crimes, more expansion. I know. I understand that. The question is, would more or less war crimes happen under Harris or Trump? Would more or less mass death happen under Harris or Trump? If it's going to happen either way, what's your best chance at preserving the most life, at saving the most lives, at preventing the, like, at stopping the most possible suffering? And that's the choice you're being offered. That's the choice you really have to grapple with. And I get it. That is a tough, difficult choice to grapple with. And so a lot of people just go, I refuse to do it. But you don't get to refuse. Refusing is making a choice. Refusing is enabling the far right extremist movement to take over and make the choice for you.
Y'all mindset is really the blue MAGA, because you believe simply not being Trump, not being a Republican, that somehow that means that you're a good person.
Okay, and this is the part of the video that I wanted to get to. Blue MAGA. This is the thing. This is the thing where I said we're going to come back to, like, everyone who disagrees with me as a lib. This is also the thing early on in the episode when I said these people, protest voting leftists, love a good slogan. They love the slogan Blue MAGA. They love that one. They love calling harm reduction voters, leftists who are harm reduction voters, Blue MAGA. This one, you guys are Blue MAGA, blue no matter who. That makes you MAGA. This slogan from them has always baffled me, because I shit you not, dealing with these people in my comments and my DMs, and after having a whole career for the last 6 years of dealing with MAGA Republicans, it is astounding the similarities between this brand of protest voter and MAGA Republicans in their rhetorical argumentative tactics. They are goddamn near indistinguishable. They are identical. So every time one of these people says, you're Blue MAGA, I'm like, what the fuck do you mean by that? What makes me Blue MAGA other than I didn't want Trump to win? First of all, how is that a MAGA thing? How is not wanting Trump to win the same as MAGA? I don't, like, that's the only thing they can point to is, like, you would do anything to prevent a Trump presidency. And I'm like, yeah, I would. That's not what a MAGA person is. But I want to take this opportunity to actually just find out who the real Blue MAGA is. This is, again, short list of the similarities between self-serving protest voter leftists and MAGA Republicans. Both of these groups call everyone who disagrees with them a liberal. MAGA Republicans and protest voter, selfish, self-serving, sanctimonious protest voter leftists, everyone who disagrees with them is a lib. And what it betrays is like a real ignorance of the reality of the political spectrum. It's just like, hey, just so you know, everyone who disagrees with you is not a liberal. And like leftists can understand this. Like whenever a MAGA Republican just calls anyone left of them liberal, leftists are the first people to get in there and be like, I'm not a liberal. I'm not a Democrat. Just, you know, I'm a leftist. Like leftists fucking hate being called liberals by MAGA Republicans. They're always like, no, I'm a socialist. Like I'm an anarchist Marxist. Like I'm a full blown like anarcho communist. Like I am not a Democrat. I am not a liberal. And you're talking to people who like have no idea what any of those terms mean. They only know anyone who's not me is a lib. And that is literally every single one of these sanctimonious self-serving people. I swear to God, have you ever, if you're out there, prove me wrong in the comments and accurately describe me as a white leftist. Like do it right now. Go ahead and disagree with me, but acknowledge that my values are the same as yours, that I am anti-capitalist, that I want a socialist framework, that I want workers to own the means of production, that I want, you know, like stronger labor unions, and I want more and more progressive policies to liberate historically marginalized and oppressed communities. I want to get rid of like borders, and I want stuff like land back and police abolition. Like I am your progressive comrade. I promise you, I am your teammate. But because we disagree on strategy, I'm a neo-fascist shit lib. Everyone who disagrees with me is a lib. It is such toddler brain shit. That's the thing where I say, like, your heart is smart, your brain is mush. Your brain is just like, anybody who disagrees with me is lib. It's so simplistic to think 75 million people voted for Kamala Harris and all of them are shit libs. If you're a person who considers yourself a leftist, you're a true leftist who is so leftist that you refuse to vote for Democrats, you refuse to vote for Kamala Harris, that means that you think in the world, in the United States, there are like 6 million true leftists. You think you're part of a movement that is like, maybe if you're lucky, 6 million strong. 81 million people voted for Joe Biden in 2020. 75 million people voted for Kamala Harris. So 6 million people dropped off. And those 6 million people are the people that you're willing to grant are like the true ones. They're the real ones that get it. That means that there's 6 million of you. And you're planning on like leading a revolution with 6 million teammates. I say this to these people all the time, to these protest voters all the time, that like, we're on the same team. That's why I'm trying to have this conversation with you. And they always go, we're not on the same team. You're a lib. You're a shit lib. And first of all, leftists are on the same team as liberals. They have to be, necessarily. You have to be in coalition with liberals and centrists and moderates if you want to win a fucking election, because that's how math works. How do you expect to prevent far-right extremists from gaining more power if you are not willing to work in coalition with centrists and moderates and liberals? How the fuck, if you think that there are 6 million of you, how are you planning on winning the revolution? There's 350 million people in the United States, and you're going to lead an anarchist revolution with 6 million people? You think you've got 6 million teammates and you're like riding hard on that? We've got a bigger team than that. I promise you in the United States, there are like at least 60 or 70 million like real progressive leftists. I promise you. And I promise you that like 50 or 60 million of those real true progressive leftists voted for Harris because they understand political strategy and because they understand harm reduction. I promise you, you have more friends and more teammates than you think. You are limiting the scope of what your movement is capable of doing by saying, only people I call leftists are leftist. Only people I deem worthy of the title are leftist. You are limiting the scope of what our movement is capable of doing by making it so small. The left is so much bigger than you and your sanctimonious ego. The world is so much bigger than you and your sanctimonious ego. We don't always perfectly agree, but that doesn't mean that we aren't more aligned than not. That doesn't mean that we both can't equally recognize the existential threat of far-right extremist theocratic oligarchy. Like, that does not mean that we cannot be united on that front.
Sorry, just gotta jump in here really quick and say one more thing before I move on. Libs of TikTok. You're literally doing libs of TikTok when you say that anyone who remotely disagrees with your terrible political strategy at all is a cucked out shit lib. Like that, like libs of TikTok, where they're just like, look at all these crazy libs. Look at all these libs crashing out over like trans rights, crashing out over like us being unnecessarily cruel to marginalized communities. Look at all these fucking libs. That's you. You're being libs of TikTok because we disagree about harm reduction and political strategy. And you're calling me Blue MAGA while you're doing the reductive libs of TikTok thing.
The next thing. Everyone who disagrees with me is a paid shill. They cannot conceive of a world where someone would disagree with them for free. It doesn't make sense to them that someone would like think they're wrong without being paid to. The simplicity of your brain, if that's what you think. Like, so a MAGA Republican, this person in my comments right now is saying, most of us don't believe that. Yes, you do! In the edited version of this video, I have comment after comment after comment after comment on the screen right now. DM after DM after DM of you people calling me a paid shill for Israel, saying that I do paid propaganda by the DNC, that I'm collecting the $7,000 chorus check. I am accused by you people all the time of being a paid shill, all the time, with no evidence. And this is something that all of these protest voter leftists and MAGA Republicans do. MAGA Republicans will see tens of millions of people in cities across the world protesting Donald Trump, and they'll go, oh, how's the Soros check? So you're all getting the Soros, I'm supposed to be afraid of paid protesters? Like, and it's toddler brain stuff. Just thinking like, yeah, that's right. Tens of millions of people are out in the street because George Soros is sending each one of us an individual check to do that. Are you kidding me? This is something that both MAGA Republicans do and these protest voter leftists do when they feel cornered. When they're outmatched in an argument, when the facts are not on their side, when they are intellectually like stumped, they just like MAGA Republicans will just go like, well, this guy looks like a pedo. Like, I can't tell you the amount of time MAGA Republicans have popped into the comments of one of my videos and been like, this guy looks like he shouldn't be allowed around kids, right? Right, guys? And they'll be like, nice pedo stash. Look at his pedo stash. This guy's a pedo. Making like heinous, gross, disgusting accusations, like really consequential accusations with zero evidence. They're just saying it to troll and try to like be rude, but also because they don't have a substantive argument to make. And identically, protest voting sanctimonious white leftists will just jump in my comments in my DMs and be like, you're a shill. This guy gets paid by Israel to do pro-Israeli propaganda. This guy takes blood money. This guy takes pro-genocidal blood money. And I'm like, have you ever seen me post a video of Israeli propaganda ever? Once? Ever once? Ever once? Like, find me the video. Find me the evidence of the claim you are making. You are making like a wild claim here. Like a very, very consequential, serious accusation here. Go find the evidence of that claim. Go find the receipts of me getting paid. Go find the bank stubs of who's paying me. Go prove it or shut your fucking mouth. Bad faith, low IQ, flailing, just like, I'm just gonna make a crazy accusation just because I don't know what else to say. And indistinguishable from MAGA Republicans. Nuclear levels of projection. This is something that MAGA Republicans and protest voting leftists do. They're just constantly accusing other people of their exact behavior. The way that video just started, where the guy was like, you don't actually have principles. All you care about is like signaling that you have principles. You care about looking like you have principles. And it was just like, buddy, you are talking to the mirror. You are not talking to me. You're not talking to the 75 million people who sucked it up and voted for harm reduction. You're talking to the 6 million people who went, it's more important to me to be able to say I didn't vote for this than it is for me to try to save lives with my vote. It's more important for me to be able to performatively say, I didn't vote for this. I didn't do this. This isn't my fault, than it is for me to actually do something of substance. The projection is off the charts. And this, of course, is something that MAGA Republicans do all the time too. Everyone are sex pests except for us, even though it's always the Republicans. Everyone is a danger to children leftists are all indoctrinating children, even though it's always them who are indoctrinating children and who are endangering children. Everything is projection. Everything is like nuclear, crazy, lack of self-awareness levels of projection. This is sort of the same thing, performing their values, but not substantively being about it. You see this with MAGA Republicans by like the way that they'll like perform patriotism and like salute the flag and like, don't you disrespect my flag. Don't you kneel during the national anthem. Performatively caring about the troops, in theory, as a performance, publicly, you know, country singers going out there and being like, God bless the United States of America. That's right. I believe in God, Jesus, the troops and guns, and God bless this country and the flag and saluting the flag. And everyone, weird, it's a performance. But then when it comes time to actually show up substantively for veterans, whew, gone. Nowhere to be found. You know, not like just performatively signaling that I have a certain set of values, but nowhere to be found when it's actually time to do something of substance about it. Again, unfortunately, the protest voter contingency on the left is exactly the same. They'll put as many Palestinian flags in their bio as they have to. They'll fill it up with watermelons. They'll, you know, yap, 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 yap all day long about how much they care about it. But if you say, hey, are you willing to do something hard and compromise your personal values so that you can potentially save some lives? Absolutely not. No. Kidding me? No. Then I wouldn't be able to be performative on the internet and be sanctimonious and lord that over other people. If I wasn't part of a super minority that's fucking over the entire world, I wouldn't be able to sanctimoniously talk about how special I am and how much smarter I am than everyone else. When it comes time to do something of substance to show that you are about it, you're nowhere to be found. Endless whataboutisms. This is a rhetorical argumentative tactic that MAGA Republicans use. It's the exact same rhetorical argumentative tactic of protest voting leftists. The endless nauseating whataboutism. So every time people on the left say, fuck ICE, and ICE is terrible, and ICE is destroying our country, MAGA Republicans get online and say, you didn't think so when Obama was doing it. You liked it when Obama did it, and you loved it because he's a Democrat. Oh, if Obama does it, when we talk about the fucking Epstein files, this is something I didn't talk about in the section of like the bad stuff when I was talking about like stuff that wouldn't have happened if Harris had been elected, is like the fact that the president is a serial child rapist and murderer and would not have been, like that right there is just like, come on, that's gotta be worth it, right? Like that's gotta be worth something. But MAGA Republicans will, if we talk about, hey guys, weren't you the people who said you care about human trafficking and like child sex slaves and stuff like that? They'll be like, well, what about Bill Clinton? What about Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton's in there. And literally protest leftists will do the exact same thing about the Epstein files and ICE. Like word for word, not even just like a similar tactic, word for word, they will be like,
the usual trolls are asking if I regret my vote for Jill Stein amid the backdrop of ICE terrorizing Minneapolis and killing Renee Nicole Good. My answer to these blue MAGA people is that if Kamala had been elected, horrible shit would be happening all the time. Y'all just wouldn't care about it. I know that because horrible shit happened throughout the Biden and Obama administrations, and y'all didn't care about it.
Oh, okay, shit, Lib. Oh, it's cool when Clinton does it, but when Trump does it, orange man bad. Oh, when Obama puts kids in cages, that's fine, but when orange man bad does it, no. The thing about these crazy whataboutisms is like, not only are they inaccurate, it's also just like insane how rhetorically similar these, like that you're using the exact same word for word argument as MAGA Republicans while having the audacity to identify me as blue MAGA. Fucking insane. Let's actually talk about some of these whataboutisms. Let's actually get into the substance of this. So yeah, this like, what about when Obama did it? That they literally both say, that MAGA Republicans say and protest voters say, when Obama did it, first of all, we didn't like it then. We didn't like it when Obama droned the Middle East, when there were drone strikes. We didn't like it then. We still don't like it. We still criticize him for it. This idea that like shit libs just never hold the Democrats accountable, we never criticize them for anything, is not true. It's just something you're just saying to cope. I don't know. Like, it's just not true. It's just substantively not true. I'm here to tell you, as the shit lib that you hate so much, that I don't like that Obama committed war crimes when he was president. I'm mad about that. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now. I didn't like that ICE existed and was putting kids in cages during the Obama administration. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now, okay? But let's actually talk about the numbers here, because not only is it, like, not true that, like, I just love when Democrats do bad things, but I only am mad when Republicans do it. We have to go back to proportionality and perspective, because these whataboutisms just absolutely do not hold up when exposed to scrutiny. 56 people died in the 8 years of the Obama administration in ICE custody. That is bad. 7 people a year. We do not like when people die unnecessarily in the custody of organizations that should not exist. ICE shouldn't exist. It should be abolished. I don't like that 56 immigrants died in 8 years under Obama, that 7 people a year died who did not even need, like, that we could just have a much more humane naturalization and immigration process, and we should, and we should be continuing to make that more and more progressive until we live in a world where we don't have to have this, like, ooh, people from different geographical regions of the earth are scarier than people from my geographical region of the earth. It's stupid, but, like, I would like to make all of that more progressive. But those are the hard, cold numbers. 56 people in 8 years, 7 people a year, and the vast majority of those deaths were from natural causes. It was from things that people already had when they were arrested. Now, the conditions that they're being held in, these, like, really inhospitable cages and detention centers, don't help in the exacerbating of those natural causes. It's all bad. I agree with you. It's bad. 38 people died in the first year of the second Trump administration. That is a five-fold increase from the 7 people a year under Obama in the 8-year span of Obama, and that's 38 people that have been reported. That is what is publicly known, and a good deal of those people were directly murdered by ICE agents by being shot in the street in broad daylight. That's not good. Already exponentially worse. But that's what's being reported. The other thing that we need to keep an eye on, crucially, is that many of these detention centers have lost track of hundreds of names of people who have been sent to their detention centers. And if you know anything about the history of concentration camps and how Germany covered up their tracks with the mass graves and the mass deaths of their concentration camps, it started with people disappearing. No one was being told publicly that they were committing mass murder in those camps. People who had been sent there, who were on record being sent there, were just not there anymore. It's not a good sign when hundreds of people who are being securely held in one location disappear. That usually means that those people are dead. And that means that the actual number of detainees from ICE who have died in the first 15 months of the second Trump administration is most likely orders of magnitude higher than 38. I kind of can't overemphasize how disgusting and terrifying and dystopic that is. Some more numbers for you. The operating budget for DHS under the 8 years of the Obama administration was around $6 billion. It's $85 billion now because of the big, beautiful bill. The hypermilitarization of ICE. If you look at pictures of what ICE looked like under the Obama administration, and you look at ICE now, we have never had federal officers who walk around wearing masks and flak jackets with machine guns, who are rappelling out of helicopters into apartments in the middle of the night and kidnapping kids. This is all unprecedented. So when protest voters and MAGA Republicans go, "You guys didn't care about it when Obama..." Yes, the fuck we did, and also, it is now exponentially worse. And it's embarrassing that you're using the exact same argument as MAGA Republicans. The Bill Clinton thing. You guys don't care about Bill Clinton being in the Epstein files. Oh my fucking God. Yes, we do. Who told you? We don't. Where are you getting your talking points from? Why do you sound so literally indistinguishable from MAGA Republicans? Let's keep going down the list. Dunning-Kruger runs rampant in these groups. You will never find a more overly confident group of dumbasses, people who are wrong about most of the things that they say publicly, who are so certain that they know everything about everything. A sign of intelligence is knowing what you can speak intelligently on, and knowing when you're beat, and knowing when something is out of your wheelhouse. I get people like asking me to talk about stuff all the time, and my response is like, I just don't know enough about that. Part of the reason why, like, I don't make a ton of content about Palestine, I've made a lot of it. I've made a lot of it, like, using my limited perspective as a white progressive from the United States who only really started digging deep into this around the same time that a lot of people did, unfortunately, which is the last 3 years. But I leave that conversation primarily to people who are like real experts on the history of the region and the history. Like there are certain people who specialize in different things. And like, I know what I speak well on and what I like, what takes me a longer time to make sure I like the things that I have to be like more careful and tread more lightly on. I co-host a show a lot on YouTube called The Line with my friend, Forrest Valkai, who is a evolutionary biologist. And every time we get a question about evolution, I just shut my ass up because Forrest just knows infinitely more than I do. And I just let Forrest talk. And like every time someone calls in and wants to like every time like a Christian MAGA Republican calls in and wants to school Forrest up on evolution, I just shut up and let Forrest talk because he knows more about it. And like, you know, there's a lot of issues that I just sort of let other communities take the lead on because I know like what I'm capable of speaking intelligently on and what I should probably just let somebody else talk about more because they know more than I do. And I can signal boost them by sharing their videos and by, you know, reposting their videos and stuff like that. And I do those things, but MAGA Republicans and protest voter leftists will talk to you on any topic and swear they're an expert. Like they have no concept of like where their intellectual deficiencies lie, when they should like shut up and listen to somebody else. And in that vein, the next thing on the list is both groups are immune to stats and evidence, immune to new information or self-reflection. The election number stats, every time I make one of these videos, my comments are full of people coping, going, doesn't matter what, that I voted third party, because even if Kamala got all the third party votes, she still would have lost. Every time. And every single time I break down the math, I go, okay, let's do it again. Let's break down the math. Okay, 81 million people voted for Joe Biden in 2020. 75 million people voted for Kamala Harris in 2024. Kamala Harris lost to Donald Trump 77 million to 75 million. That's a 2 million discrepancy in the popular vote. Around just a little over 3 million people voted third party in 2024, which means if, as you said, even if all of the third party votes went to Harris, she still would have lost. You're already wrong when it comes to the popular vote. Now, I know that we don't grade off of the popular vote. We grade off of the Electoral College. But you're already wrong when you say, like, even if we gave her every third-party vote, she still would have lost. It's like, well, maybe. But, like, she wins the popular vote. And I think we all agree that the Electoral College is anti-democratic and stupid. So if we actually had a system that makes sense, no, she actually wins if she gets all of the third-party votes. Because that's how math works. Three is a bigger number than two. But the number we actually have to look at is six. Right? 81 million votes for Joe Biden in 2020, 75 million votes for Kamala Harris in 2024. That is a 6 million voter drop-off in 4 years. We have to count all 6 million of those votes. I explain this every single time I make one of these videos because every single time there is a protest voter in my comments going, well, it doesn't even matter because she would have lost anyway. She would have lost anyway.
Okay, few more quick things I gotta say on this topic and then we'll move on. This is something that somebody pointed out to me on my Patreon. And I really liked it. They said protest voters didn't know that their vote would be inconsequential when they made their vote, whether that vote was a third party vote for Claudia De La Cruz or Jill Stein, or whether that vote was to abstain and stay home. So when they say this thing of like, there weren't enough protest votes anyway to swing the election, it doesn't matter. They didn't know that when they did that. As far as they knew at the time, this election was going to be incredibly tight, and it might have come down to just a few thousand votes in a few key swing states. Now, a lot of people might say, well, I don't live in one of those key swing states. I live in one of the states that's already spoken for. But were you out there vocally online, part of the online community that was advocating for depriving the Democratic Party of your vote, that was advocating for abstaining, that was advocating for a protest vote? Could you have aided in influencing the people in those key swing states? You didn't know that when you voted the way that you voted, you didn't know how the numbers were going to shake out. So this is an ad hoc rationalization. This is an after the fact cope. If we were playing a game of basketball and you were on my team and you were doing a bunch of things to deliberately sabotage our team, just like turning the ball over and taking bad shots and making bad fouls, and then at the end of the game we lost, but we lost by a margin of points that you felt like was bigger than your efforts to sabotage our team, and you're like, it doesn't matter, even if I had tried my hardest, we still would have lost. Even if we had, you know, like let's say you cost the team 15 points and we lost by 16 points, and now you're like, see, it doesn't even matter that I did all that stuff because we would have lost the game anyway. The thing is, you didn't know that while we were playing. As far as any of us were aware, while we were playing, we had a legitimate shot at winning, and you were going out of your way to prevent that from happening. I also want to address this comment that I got from this guy on Instagram who was like, what's easier, convincing millions of voters to change their minds or convincing one platform to just adjust its campaign a little bit, to be a little bit more progressive and to appeal to the far left a little bit more? And I said to this guy, I was like, you're in the right ballpark. Like, you're so close to getting it, but it just shows what a poor grasp of like basic logic and math and reasoning these people have by and large. Because he's asking almost the right question, like, well, what makes more sense here? Expecting the 6 million people who dropped off from 2020 to 2024 to change their mind, or expecting the Harris Walz campaign to adjust to appeal to those 6 million people? The problem is the Harris Walz campaign was successful enough to garner 75 million votes. They already had the support of 75 million voters in the base. There were only two campaigns that got anywhere near those kind of numbers, just the two, the Trump campaign and the Harris campaign. He got 77 million, she got 75 million. Nobody else got anywhere even close to that many. Jill Stein didn't get a million votes. It's not like the next closest was 20 million or 30 million. The next closest was under a million. But your solution is they should have been more like the Cornel West campaign. They should have been more like the Claudia De La Cruz campaign. They should have been more like the Jill Stein campaign. And if they had done that, they would have won. Those campaigns that did not break a million votes, that could not get a million people to agree on them. There were 75 million of us in the left-leaning coalition who agreed to vote for the Harris Walz campaign. There were just like a very small, relatively small handful of outliers who would not do it. And you're saying that all of us, all 75 million of us, we all should have adjusted to appease you, not the other way around. Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
And I explained this very simple math, that if we give her all 6 million of the votes that dropped off, the people who abstained because they were protesting, she wins in a landslide. She wins easily. So actually, in all actuality, yes, it was the protest vote that very much so did cost her the election and directly resulted in the election of Donald Trump. That's just how math works, but it doesn't matter how many times I explain that math. This thing that I said, immune to stats and evidence, immune to new information or self-reflection, they just keep repeating that same line. That also goes into the thing of like loving a good slogan. They love a slogan. MAGA Republicans and protest voters love slogans. Protest voters love going like, they just want to go back to brunch. How many times have you seen that? I bet in the comments of this live stream right now, it's been said at least 20 times. Why don't you go back to brunch? Why don't you go back to brunch, shill? This shill just wants to go back to brunch. This shill just, he just wants to shill for Kopmala at brunch. For Kopmala Harris at brunch. This shill here, they love it. This blue MAGA shill, they love a slogan. They love a catchy slogan. They just MAGA Republicans love a slogan too. They love a catchy little thing that they can go to, catchy little slogan. Supreme callous selfishness is another trait that exists in both of these groups. I've got a comment on the screen right now of this guy that was in my comments who was like, I don't care. If you can't figure out a way to appeal to me, if the party can't appeal to my needs and what I need, I'm not voting for them. And I tried to explain to this guy like, yeah, that's the problem. Like, you only care about yourself. I'm going to play more of this video from the guy I was playing earlier really quick.
There's nothing insane about it. You simply just don't have principles. And even your comment highlights it. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, spoke about white liberals like yourself. You can't see outside of yourself because you don't actually care about these groups. So if these other groups are being marginalized, that's okay because that's the norm, that's the status. But if it somehow impacts you, now that's when it's an issue.
So again, the projection, you don't have principles. You don't care about anyone else. Malcolm, the virtue signaling, like the Malcolm X said they love that too. Like Malcolm X said, beware the white liberal. First of all, everyone who disagrees with me is a liberal. Appeal to authority of Malcolm X said white liberals are bad, so therefore I'm right. Doesn't matter what the results of my actions were. Doesn't matter how many stats you can throw in front of me of how I directly, my actions directly led to the rise of Christo-fascist billionaire pedophiles running the world. Doesn't matter. Malcolm X said. And then also on top of that, this thing of like, you only care about you. You don't care about other people. Once it affects you, that's when you care. And what's crazy here is I am in the most privileged class of people in my country. And the reason I vote the way I vote is because I am willing to forego my selfish desires on behalf of communities that will be hurt harder than me, that will be hurt more than me if Donald Trump wins. The genocide in Palestine, in Gaza, matters to me. I fucking care about that. And I am willing to set aside like my sanctimonious issue that I care about to go, yes, that matters. And also I need to be thinking about everyone that is more marginalized than me. I need to think about all of my trans friends and all of my disabled friends and all of the women and immigrants that are going to suffer exponentially more if Donald Trump wins. This has nothing to do with my discomfort, with me only caring when it affects me. And again, the projection here of like telling me that it's me who only cares when it affects me, when your thing was, if you can't meet me on the stuff that matters to me, to number one, then fuck everybody. Fuck everybody if your campaign can't meet me. All the protest voters are like, they should have done a better job making sure I was satisfied with the campaign. They didn't do a good enough job appealing to me, to number one. If you can't appeal to me, then fuck the entire world. If you can't give me a candidate that I like, that I approve of, then fuck every other marginalized group. Like, you aren't talking about me when you say that. You are talking about yourself. You are looking in the mirror. The last way that these two groups are the same, goalpost moving and coping. I mean, I saw this during when Alex Preddy died directly, that there was this post where this guy said, that's what happens, like FAFO, that's what happens when you pull your gun and point it at a cop. And someone was like, can you show me in the video where he pulled his gun and pointed it at a cop? And then the guy was like, he was armed. He had a gun on him. He reached for it. And the guy was like, did you just see that you said he pulled it and pointed? And then when I said, show me where, and you couldn't, you moved to he reached for it. And then we moved on to show me where he reached for it. And you said, well, he had it and he didn't have his permit. The goalpost moving, like the inability to just go, all right, you got me. Protest voting leftists, I hate to say it, you do the exact same thing all the time. Well, she said she was going to do the exact same thing. She said that she was going to keep doing the genocide. She wouldn't even say the word ceasefire. You show them like five clips of her saying ceasefire and they're like, oh, I mean, well, would it have killed her to have said that like she would have broken, she wouldn't have done the same thing as Biden? It's like, well, that's not actually how she answered that interview. Like you just like that's your one clip. Okay, well, she said most lethal military. Goalpost moving, just shifting it down. And then this whole like the last thing on the list, the real last thing on the list is straw man. Not knowing what a straw man is. Both MAGA Republicans and protest voting leftists are always accusing me of straw man arguments while doing the thing I'm showing them doing. Like, I can make a video about MAGA Republicans where I'm showing just like actual quotes from actual MAGA Republicans on the screen, and they'll be like, nice straw man, lib. And I'm like, I showed you that was like a quote from Charlie Kirk. Like, I was just reading a thing Charlie Kirk said. And like, do you know what a straw man is? I didn't like rephrase his opinion to make it sound weaker. I just showed what he said. Or I'll like do a direct response video to a conservative where I'm like showing them talking and then I'm responding and they'll be like, straw man argument. And it's like, a straw man isn't just an argument you have a hard time refuting. A straw man is when I actively misrepresent your position to make my position seem stronger. And the people on the left, like these protest voters on the left, do this all the time too. This video will be full of direct, like, I'm showing things on the screen of, like, this is something that people say to me all the time in this movement. I'm not making this up. It's not a straw man. This is something that happens. And they will still be in my comments and be like, oh, nice straw man shit, lib. How's that Israel money taste? Like, they will be in the comments accusing me of being a shill while calling me a straw man for saying that they do that. And they will not realize that it's like, it's not a straw man if you do that. If you do that, then I'm not straw manning. I'm telling the truth about the thing that you do. Okay, so those are all of the reasons why the protest vote contingency is very scarily similar in their rhetorical argumentative tactics to actual MAGA Republicans. Now let's evaluate all of the reasons why they say we are actually blue MAGA. According to like this video, and I genuinely can't find the information on this, but like in this video, this guy just says it's because you vote blue no matter who, and you feel like you're a good person as long as you don't elect Donald Trump, and that makes us blue MAGA. Like, that's the evidence that he offers, and I just have to say, like, weak, dude. That I'm sorry, that's so weak to say that we are MAGA because we are willing to do whatever it takes to prevent one of the most evil people in existence from becoming the most powerful man in existence. Weak. It's so crazy to say we don't have principles because we care about that, and that makes us like MAGA. Weak. Like, weak. I just gave you a crazy list of ways that you are virtually identical to MAGA Republicans, and yours is you care too much about stopping Donald Trump. I don't know how that makes me like MAGA. Anyway, we're back to the beginning of the video of the point where I'm sure a lot of people are in my comment section right now. I'm sure a lot of people in the comments on TikTok right now. Can't we just move on? Okay, Austin, we get it. You beat us over the head with it one more time. Can't we just move on? Not without accountability and clarity. Last time we went to the shooting range together, you shot me several times, and I want to take you to the shooting range again because we've got an upcoming war and we both need to make sure that like our skills with a firearm are on point, but I need to know you're not going to shoot me again when we go to the shooting range. And you're like, can't you let it go? I did that like 15 months ago. You're still harping on that. It's like, I will keep harping on it until you tell me that you know what you did wrong and that you understand why it was wrong and you make me reasonably assured that you're not going to do it again. We have a midterm coming up, and it is crucially important that we lock the fuck in and that we get this right, that we rebuke the extremism, the dangerous extremism coming from the far right, and that you understand how your selfish performative actions directly empowered all of the worst atrocities of the last 15 months. I need to know that you know that. And that's why I'm making videos like this. I'm sorry it's annoying. I'm sorry that my tone of voice bothers you when I'm pointing out all of the ways that you're very wrong about everything. I've even seen people make that. I've seen people in my comments be like, it's not that Austin's wrong. It's just that I'm annoyed about how he talks about it. Like, it's annoying. And I'm just like, cool, that's fine. If you need to be annoyed at me, fine. As long as you understand what I'm saying and why I'm saying it. As long as you like get why harm reduction matters and why political strategy and political pragmatism matters, you can hate me all you want. I don't care. As long as you understand that we actually do need to be on a team and that we actually are working in a coalition, then hate me all you want. That's my spiel. Let's go over to the TikTok digital studio audience. Before I do that, I do want to mention patreon.com/AustinArcher again, where this show is, there's a longer version of this show on Patreon, an extended version. I often post exclusive and bonus content over there. A lot of the talk back with the TikTok digital studio audience gets cut out for time in the public-facing version. It doesn't get cut out over on Patreon. You get a full extended version of the whole discussion if you want more. Med Lockdown says, brother is struggling with criticism. My goodness. So again, projection. It's so crazy, isn't it? Isn't it wild how like that it's like you are talking about yourself right there. This whole video was me criticizing you and telling you why you deserve to be criticized, and you can't handle it. You cannot hear it. You can't. So many things that I just listed there about how these people are indistinguishable from MAGA Republicans. Projection, saying you're doing the thing I'm doing. The inability to adjust when new information is given to you. I can't make the case any clearer than I just made it. I just made such a thorough, clear case. And like, you just can't adjust. You're just like, nope, I'm right. Nope, I'm right. Supreme Dunning-Kruger, just like, No. I'm the only one who gets it. Orla Conway says, protest voters are still saying Trump and Harris would be the same. We have Anne Frank infants in attics. So this is something that I have been assured by many people in the protest voter contingency is not true. I made several videos about how they're saying things would have been just the same. It would have been just as bad. And then I made a video about like why it wouldn't be just the same. All of the measurable ways that it, and including this video, I broke it all down, all of the measurable clear ways that it clearly is exponentially worse now than it would have been, irrefutably. And what's crazy is the people that will jump into my comments and say, no one's saying that. No one's actually saying it would be just as bad. And my response to them is, then you either agree with me or you don't. If you agree with me that things are measurably, irrefutably worse than they would have been under Harris, then you agree that you fucked up. That's what that means. It means you agree that you enabled a much worse situation. You enabled more harm. If you disagree and say, no, I did the principled thing, and it doesn't really matter anyway because nothing would be different, what you're saying is Kamala Harris would have done all the same stuff. She would have gotten rid of USAID. She would have let Elon and the incels gut the federal government. She would have enriched herself by $4 billion. She would have kidnapped the president of Venezuela and killed the Ayatollah of Iran. She would have been obsessed with conquering Greenland and Cuba and Mexico and Canada. She would have renamed every building in Washington after herself. She would have torn down the White House. She would have done all the same stuff. It's one or the other. Either I'm lying and you don't actually think that, and that's a straw man, or you think that, and it's not a straw man. You can't have it both ways. If you agree that things are exponentially worse now than they would have been, then you agree you fucked up. But if you can't agree that you fucked up, then I'm not making a straw man argument. That's just how that works. Sorry, checkmate. Hey, People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. If you could want to find more of my music, go check the link in the description, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. My new single, American Dream, it's streaming everywhere but Spotify, because fuck Spotify. Patreon.com/Austin Archer. Memberships start at just $1 a month. Are you kidding me? $10 buys you a whole year. You get exclusive content. You get bonus content. The algorithm doesn't hide shit from you. You get all kinds of perks. It's really, really fun over there, and also it's really, 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 really affordable. And okay, that's it. Love you so much. We'll see you next time. Until then, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Bye-bye.